Welcome to the Ames Heartbeat Podcast, a monthly brief interview with social services, civic, education, and business leaders about life in Ames and Story County. This podcast is produced and presented by the Serve Ministries of Christ Community Church, committed to the pursuit of common good while sharing the uncommon news of the gospel in and from Central Iowa, right here where God has placed us, because loving Ames means knowing Ames.
Hello and welcome. I'm Wayne Stewart, Serve Pastor at Christ Community Church in Ames, Iowa, and your podcast host. Our guest today is Emily Easton, on staff at Four Oaks Family Connections, a nonprofit that holds the contract with HHS to recruit, license, and train foster, kinship, and adoptive families. Her role at Four Oaks is to get the word out to the community that there is an urgent need for more foster families in Iowa. Emily and her husband live in Ames, have four biological children, and were licensed foster parents for 8 years. So Emily, welcome to our podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you here today. It's so fun to get these conversations with a whole broad range of people across the spectrum of sort of social services and education, civic leaders. We're excited to hear what we're wanting to hear. And so today we're going to ask you the four questions that we ask everybody. We're going to ask you from your space of leadership, how you might think things are going well in Ames and surrounding communities. Secondly, some of the challenges that we're currently undergoing, or maybe historically as well. Third, we're going to ask for one thing that you would like the church to know specifically from your position of leadership in the area that you're involved in. And then lastly, one thing that people of maybe divergent opinions, but of goodwill could come together on. So, yeah. Ready to get started?
I am. Bring it on.
All right. Awesome. So first question is, you know, in Ames and Story County and areas around here, where do you think some things are going well?
Yeah, so just a little bit about who I am and what I do. So I work for Four Oaks Family Connections, and we license, train, and support foster families in Story County, Polk County, well, all across Iowa, but I work right here locally. And so historically, what's gone well, right, in this area? Historically, in Story County, we had one of the highest numbers of foster families in the area, definitely, and even sufficient numbers to be able to accept and support kids from Polk County as well. So that's a huge, huge need is foster families, and historically, we've done that well. And additionally, the churches in the area have done that well and even, like, been recognized from our, you know, state-run organization of just standing out, right, amongst the state. And so I think that that is one thing that really shines in our community.
Great. So maybe on the number side of things, to sort of give people a sense of the scope, when you say that there's a positive response from the community to specifically fostering or supporting the foster process or whatever that might look like, can you give us a sense of how that would differ from other communities? Is it a percentage better? Is there sort of a per capita number or something that you look at to go, wow, Story County actually gets that there's a need here?
Right. So when you look at foster care and statistics, all those numbers are a little squishy, right? I like to say, because there's so many variables involved in them. But I would say in past years, maybe 5 years ago, Story County was one of the only counties that had more foster families licensed than kids referred into care.
Oh, wow.
And that wasn't true in counties surrounding us, especially Polk, just because it's so large. And so that's a pretty significant number, right? It's a pretty significant statistic. So each year in Iowa, about 4,000 kids are in need of a temporary home. So just to give you kind of a scope of what sort of numbers we're looking at statewide, that's a number I can throw at you. But in past years, Story County is really shined mm-hmm. amongst, yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. Would you say that that's something that is recent? You said maybe it's a bit historic for our county. Are there some precursors to that in terms of sort of organizations like yours or leadership in the community that has supported that along the way and made that a reality?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that in Story County, churches have really shined. And I think that Christ Community is one of them. I think that you know, you have welcomed me and Four Oaks and have a number of foster families yourselves and have partnered with other churches in the area that have been influential and really sort of taken up the vision of and mission of foster care, right? And so that has been significant and has been recognized even, you know, in our non-faith-based organized, like our state-run organization, you know.
Yeah. It feels to me like it's in layers a little bit sometimes when I look at a congregation like ours. There are people who have done that consistent, hard, and good work for decades, literally. And many of the folks who attend here on a Sunday probably wouldn't even know that. So people are just doing what needs to be done, and somehow they've gotten their heart, you know, sort of prodded in the right direction, and they've matched it with action. And then there, to me, it seems like maybe there's a new wave as well of sort of young foster families and young couples that are willing to take on this responsibility as well in care. Would that be true? I'm just running into a lot more people who are aware of the need and actually stepping into it.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the myths that we battle is you have to have everything together, right? I can't be a foster parent unless I'm a perfect parent or, right, unless I am an experienced parent or unless. And so I think we're, when people in church see other people doing it and they're like, oh, they're normal people. Maybe I could do it too, right? Like they're not like superheroes. They're just like depending on God's grace one day at a time, like the rest of us, you know? I think that that really inspires other people to get involved. So even statistically, like our number one successful recruitment strategy is one-to-one, like parent-to-parent, family-to-family recruitment. And so I think that really makes a big impact, right? And so breaking some of those myths that you have to be a certain age, you can have kids, you can't have kids, you have to be married, you can't be single. Like none of those things are true, right? Because the right home can look really different. We have kids that would really thrive in a single-parent home, you know, based on some of the trauma and hurts that they've had. You know, that might, a small family might be just right. Or a kid that would, you know, love a big family and all the energy and all the, you know, so there are just so many different sort of needs. I'm just really excited to see lots of different looking families, different ages, to, you know, coming in to learn more about it.
Yeah, that's great. So clearly there are still things to be done in this area, still more to be done, but encouraging, really encouraging to hear that there's a historic sort of basis and maybe even an increasing sense of awareness and folks sort of answering the call here. So that's encouraging. So question number two then, where are some areas, you know, in Ames that we could be more aware of, giving some concern to, where are some of our challenges?
Right. So statewide, we have seen a decrease since 2020 in foster families, and we're slowly, you saying like, oh, I feel an uptick. We are slowly bringing, coming back from it, right? But it's been a hard upward climb to get enough foster families. And Four Oaks and just child welfare and just people in general, right? If a child is going to be removed from their home, they deserve to have a home. And that's, you know, what we're here to do is to make sure that those kids have homes. So we are coming back from that, but it has been kind of a struggle. So additionally in Ames, you know, Polk County obviously has the, is the most densely populated county. So it has the most referrals, and, Ames sees a lot of Polk County kids. So even theoretically, let's say in Ames, we had enough families for everyone. We're not there yet. We're still coming back like the rest of the state. We're not quite where we used to be on those numbers, but theoretically, even we've got to that point, the work's not done because there are kids surrounding us in neighboring communities that, that need a home too.
So referrals can happen from county to county. It's a statewide sort of system.
Right. We try to keep, so birth parents maintain rights, and reunification is the number one like goal, right? So, and from a, so I was a licensed foster parent myself. And so from my personal perspective, that's really exciting to me because I have the opportunity to reach not just a child, but a whole family, right? And impact healing and like all kinds of stuff, be a part of that. So that's really exciting. I lost my train of thought. What was your question?
whether or not it was sort of a statewide referral system or something very, very local.
So because we have that reunification goal, I got it now, I'm with you. We have that reunification goal, we try to match families close to where those birth families are, right? Because they maintain rights and they're working together and mentoring and having a relationship, ideally. That gets harder and harder to do when kids are further and further away from home. So we start close to home. Yeah. And as we get no's from families, as we are unable to find them, we'll expand that perimeter a little bit. So that's what has happened when our Story County foster families are getting Polk County calls.
Okay. So your agency is licensed to the state or through the state, and then you can have purview wherever it's needed, but the preference is definitely as local as possible is what I'm
hearing a little bit. Yeah. So we are contracted with the Department of Health and Human Services statewide, but we're divided into kind of groups, and we try to keep within the policy states. We start with a 20 mile. So we drop a pin in that birth family's home and we put a 20 mile radius on it. And we start with families that will match within those 20 miles based on geography and also the preferences of the family. Cause we want the family and the kid to be thriving. Yeah. And so part of being a licensed foster parent is that you can tell us what sort of age, gender, behaviors you could or couldn't meet, stuff like that. So we take all that in consideration when we're matching homes.
Yeah, fantastic. So question from the numbers that you gave me, or at least the last few years of numbers and sense of meeting the need, is a lot of this related to come back from COVID, like everything else?
I mean, our numbers dropped right when COVID did, right? And so you have to think that that's true. And I think people are starting to heal. They're starting to feel more comfortable. It's really hard. You know, foster care is messy. And so when you take a time in history that's already messy and you're saying, hey, why don't you do something else hard, you know, challenging.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a big ask, right? And so we just saw less people in that season of life say yes to that big ask. But I think people are bouncing back and feeling more ready for challenges again.
Great. One of the things that I've personally become more aware of is the especially difficult nature of family-induced trauma as opposed to any other broad range of traumas that you might, and that could be expressed in sort of any kind of misuse or abuse, right?
Absolutely.
But the idea that something that is supposed to be solid in someone's life is not, and that it actually brings trauma is something very new to me thinking, you know, in terms of a discrete category. Could you speak a little bit to that in terms of the challenge as well?
Absolutely. So we make tons of efforts to train our foster families in trauma and how to parent kids from hard places, right? And there's so much identity and self and sense of security and safety, you know, that's all mixed in with the trauma and the things that kids are facing. So not only are our kids coming out of hard places and hurting places, they have to face the trauma that caused that, but additionally, the loss of their parent. So some people might say, well, if the situation is bad, aren't they happy to come out of it, but not necessarily, right? Because family is family, and any of those needs that those kids did have met, even if it was inconsistent or, you know, messy, they were met by that caretaker. And so there is still a lot of attachment. So that's one thing we talk about is that attachment and helping foster families recognize what that looks like and how to be supportive, but also support that birth family, right? We're not going to throw that birth family under the bus. We're not going to, you know, speak poorly of them because that is where those kids come from and that's important. And so we do a lot of trauma-informed care training as part of our licensing process. We do a lot of just talking about that birth family connection and the importance of it and it's huge. And then once our families are licensed, they can pick additional trainings. There's tons of support and information out there.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's something that people would be surprised to hear a little bit, right? Is sort of the holistic sense of the approach. It's in some senses, if the kid needs to be removed from a situation, we know it's bad, right? And so you go, we get that. But at the same time, the desire is not just the removal, it's the holistic approach of, well, where do we go from here? I think one of the things I've been reading and getting a little bit too is that this whole arena is a little bit about letting everybody involved know that what they've experienced so far is not all that there is, right? That there actually are circumstances and people that can be trusted and that people actually can change and that situations can change. And I think that brings a great amount of comfort, encouragement. You know, if hope is one of the things that gets extinguished by, you know, these experiences in life, then boy, that needs to be replaced in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And just speaking from my own personal experience, not necessarily Four Oaks, but that is a big part of the why. Like, why do you do it, right? It's hard and kids sometimes go back home and don't stay with you. And why do you do that again and again? But when something is really messy, then there's like such big potential for something really amazing, yeah. Like for God to do something really big. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that happen in kids that have been in our home and had the honor and privilege to be the one that gets to watch it happen, you know? And so there's a lot of joy, even though there's a lot of hurt that comes along too.
Yeah. Okay. So third question then is what is one thing that you specifically would like the church to know?
Yeah. I just want the church to know that, that you can do it. It's hard, but you can do it. I also want the church to know that I just feel like the church is very uniquely equipped for foster care, because foster care is hard, but it takes a village, right? It takes support. And I just feel like the church was built for community, mm-hmm. and community is what it takes to care for these kids, right? Yeah. That's true for our own biological kids, and it's true for kids coming into foster care, right? They need parents, their parents need support, and they need to just be around people that are safe and stable, and they need to see what life can be, you know? And so I just think that the church is especially equipped for that. So certainly for foster care, for becoming a licensed foster parent, but also for some of those wraparound services, right? Like maybe you're not in a season of life to be a foster parent. Maybe that's not the wise thing to do for you in this time of life, right? But do you know a foster parent? Could you babysit? Could you drop them off a Chick-fil-A gift card or whatever, you know, that dinner, yep. like whatever? There are a lot of ways to support foster families that the church can really come along. And I just think about personally, when I'm fostering and things are hard, what do I need? When you say yes to foster care, it's really inconvenient, right? Like there's a lot of things that come up last minute, and there's right. a lot of appointments, and there's sometimes where you just have to drop everything because that kid just needs you. Mm-hmm. And so I think like, okay, if a foster parent is doing all of those things that are good but hard and inconvenient, how do I make the rest of their normal life convenient, right? Like how do I serve them in those ways? Additionally, we really, really need respite providers. So mm-hmm. you can get licensed and become a respite provider, which means if a foster family needs overnight childcare, they need to find another licensed foster parent to do that. So the convenience of just having a buddy that is like, if you need a break for a weekend or you're traveling or you need to go on a date or like whatever, like I'm your person, you know, can be another really beneficial way that the church can support foster families.
Great. And since we're in the Midwest, then probably hot dish.
Right. Obviously.
Yeah.
You know, a stack of freezer meals that can just be there when you need it. Who would say no to that?
Yeah. Which I've come to learn is not a hot dish or hot dishes, but just hot dish.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a casserole girl. That's how I say it.
Yeah. Yeah. Where I grew up, it was
kind
casserole.
Of on the line. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well, lastly, then, this has been an intriguing question to ask a whole bunch of different people. And that is, you know, there's people of divergent opinion and approach sure. to hard problems in our community and broadly in our societies. But we've got to be able to think that there's some things that we could actually come together on, even if we held divergent opinions. So given that people of goodwill could get together on something that they might actually have some significantly different opinions on the approach and outcome, what do you think is something that we could come together on?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes our tendency is all or nothing. And if it's not right. perfectly how I want it to be or how I, you know, would like it to be, however you want to phrase it, then it's not for me. But I guess my challenge would just be to say and throw, instead of like throwing out everything, say, at what point can I? And I would certainly never, ever, ever want any foster family to like, I would never encourage them to do something that's like beyond theologically what they're comfortable with or anything like that. But that doesn't mean that the whole thing is a waste, right? Even if the organization would support something that you would disagree with. So as a state-run, you know, organization. So so that would be the challenge. Like, what can I do? There's still so many things that you would be, like, called to do that are well within what you would be comfortable with. And so I guess that's what I would – that's my ask. Right? For the community, the faith community.
I think that's a great reflective question. What is it that I can do, right? In all good conscience and with my whole heart.
Right.
That's a great question. Thank you so much for coming in today. It's
been
really
fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Ames Heartbeat Podcast. Check out more episodes at ccames.org/podcasts or on many of your favorite streaming services.